Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The film Darkest Hour, starring Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill, is now showing in St. Louis at Plaza Frontenac Cinema. It will be released in more St. Louis theaters in the coming days. The Darkest Hour refers to Churchill's early days as Prime Minister during World War II, when Nazi Germany was sweeping across Europe. Here is Oldman as Churchill.
When will the lesson be learned? How many more dictators must be wooed, appeased, good God, given immense privileges, before we learn? You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth!
There is a unique connection between Winston Churchill and the town of Fulton, Missouri, about 100 miles west of St. Louis. Churchill visited the small town in 1946. Producer Alex Hoyer spoke recently with Timothy Riley, the director of the National Churchill Museum at Westminster College in Fulton, and first asked why the British leader came to the middle of Missouri.
Churchill came to Fulton after he lost the election. People forget that he won the war in 1945. After VE Day, there was a general election in Britain, and Churchill's party lost. So he was arguably the most recognizable figure in the world, but without a job. He was no longer prime minister. And it was in this environment that he received an invitation from Frank McClure, the president of Westminster College, inviting him to come to Fulton to speak. Now, I'm sure that invitation would have been given to a secretary and politely declined, save for a very famous postscript on the bottom of the letter, written in longhand, said, "This is a wonderful school in my home state. Hope you can do it. If you come, I will introduce you, Harry S. Truman." And when Churchill saw that, he knew that he would be on the same stage with the President of the United States. He would be back in the game, and he accepted the invitation to come to Fulton to give what turned out to be one of the 20th century's most important speeches.
And that speech was?
The speech was the Sinews of Peace, now commonly known as the Iron Curtain speech, for its famous phrase, "An iron curtain has descended across the continent," which announced really the beginning of the Cold War. Churchill knew full well that the next threat after World War II was Soviet communism, and chose Fulton, Westminster College, to warn the world that if that threat was not met with a sound policy and a sound union between America and Britain, that the Soviets might continue to expand and we might see World War III. So Churchill really announced, he called the shot here in Fulton, that set some, a policy which ultimately, many, many years later, ended the Cold War.
And you said that he had kind of wanted to get back in the game. This was his chance to be introduced by the President of the United States. What was the effect of giving this speech for Churchill? Did it get him back in the game?
Churchill, after the loss of the election, did, in fact, was despondent and somewhat depressed until he was invited to Fulton to give the Iron Curtain speech, and he was ebullient after that. And he did get back in the game. The speech here in Fulton, followed by another one in Zurich a few months later, really re-energized Winston Churchill and caught the attention of the world. And some of the things that he said in the Iron Curtain speech here and also in Zurich laid the foundations for the Truman Doctrine, the Marshall Plan, and really set a course for some of the most positive things that happened in the last half of the 20th century. So that was really in large measure due to Churchill's getting back into the game, if you will.
Churchill gives his famous speech here. That would have all been fine and dandy. He came to the middle of Missouri, but there has been and continues to be a stalwart effort to maintain a connection between Great Britain and the middle of America. Why is that?
Well, I think part of it has to do with the term special relationship between our two nations. That was a term that was actually coined by Churchill here in Fulton in the Iron Curtain speech. He mentions the special relationship for the first time and the union between the English-speaking peoples, as Churchill put it. We continue to have conversations and share resources with our colleagues in London and throughout the UK. We have a lot of speakers come from the UK to participate in our programs and share their knowledge here at the National Churchill Museum at Westminster College. But I think even more importantly, the idea, the boldness of inviting Winston Churchill to the middle of America in the first place is a remarkable feat. We have a history of kind of performing above our weight class, if you will, and I think people recognize that and like to be it. We've attracted world leaders, President Reagan, Mikhail Gorbachev, Margaret Thatcher, have all visited. The museum, spoken at Westminster College, following in the footsteps of Winston Churchill. And I think more and more people will do that in the months and years to come.
I'm sure you could talk for a long time about this, but why is it important to remember and have a museum to memorialize Winston Churchill?
I think, particularly today, the world is looking for leadership. And bold, resolute leadership. They're looking for people who are not afraid to make mistakes, and Churchill certainly made mistakes. But he had the resilience to get up and move on, to face adversity straight on, without apologies. And that type of leadership, those qualities of leadership, the visionary thinking, the statesmanship, the seeing the interconnected countries in the world, peoples in the world, those kinds of things were gifts that Churchill had as prime minister and as a statesman for so many years. And those qualities resonate with audiences today. We get asked the question from visitors at the museum, why don't we have more leaders like Churchill? And I think that's a good question to be asked. Now, I'm not sure all of our leaders would have as many cigars or glasses of champagne daily that Churchill did, but the vision and the resilience, the boldness, the courage, and the magnanimity of Churchill are all qualities that seem to be resonating with people today, and I think it's a valid question. So when they come here to the National Churchill Museum, if it's a school group, group of senior citizens, or the average visitor coming in, they experience some of these qualities of leadership and are enlightened, informed, and in many ways inspired by the legacy and life of Winston Churchill.
I think many people would say is that the kind of leadership qualities that Churchill exhibited are very much absent on the world stage today. We see the breakup of the UK split from the European Union. There would be plenty of people who would point to President Trump's some of the more isolationist things that he's doing. And so I'm wondering about kind of the lessons of Churchill's leadership and trying to bring that to the present.
Well, I think the world today is in a spot that Churchill would not have recognized, and on the other hand, he would have recognized. We see an influx of the rise of nationalist thinking in Europe, something that concerned Churchill a great deal. Of course, he warned against the ultimate nationalism of Germany, which was the great Nazi threat. And Churchill was disturbed by that. There's no way of telling what Churchill would really think today. He's not alive to tell us. But some of the things that he fought so with such passion for during his lifetime are threatened. NATO, for instance, is something that Churchill believed in a great deal. And I think he would be perhaps disappointed to know that that there were plans to perhaps weaken it in some form or fashion. Churchill wanted to bring people together for the common good. The sinews of peace, the title of his famous speech here in Fulton, sinews are muscle tissue. They keep us together. They bind us together. That's what Churchill wanted, not fracturing us or tearing us apart. It's the opposite of what Churchill was standing for. And I think that's one of the reasons that today we can learn from Churchill's life and legacy in a way that's very timely.
What do you hope school groups specifically gain when they come here?
Well, I think when school groups come to this museum, our hope and really our mission and purpose is to make history come alive. History is oftentimes relegated, I think, sometimes to the back burner in education today. And it was something that Churchill believed in strongly. He studied history, was a great passionate historian himself. And if we can do something to the current and next generations to make history come alive so that we learn from the past, I'm paraphrasing Churchill, but he essentially said, you know, the farther you look back, the farther forward you can see. And I think that's what we do here. We look back, we learn lessons from the past, apply those lessons to the contemporary landscape. And a museum like this, where you can experience and see and almost feel the decisions that Churchill made, is something that we can use to inspire and inform. History is not a dead subject here. History is something that comes alive, is full well, and you can't help but experience it.
That's Timothy Riley, director of the National Churchill Museum in Fulton, Missouri, talking with producer Alex Hoyer. Churchill delivered his famous Iron Curtain speech foreshadowing the Cold War in Fulton in 1946. That is the sound of an organ in a centuries-old church in Fulton, Missouri. How the church came to be in Fulton is an interesting postscript of the story about the connection between Churchill and Missouri. Joining me in studio is producer Alex Hoyer to talk about that part of the story. And it is a fascinating sidebar, isn't it?
It is. I thought it was the most interesting part of the connection between Churchill, England, between Churchill, England, and Fulton, Missouri.
Well, tell us about it. There's a church that was someplace else for a long, long time before it wound up in Fulton.
Right. So the first records of this specific church, and it's called St. Mary the Virgin Aldermanbury Church, it was in central London, and the first records of it come from the 1180s when it was first constructed. And to give you a sense of when that was, William Shakespeare's contemporaries were there. Two of the actors in his plays went to the church. Shakespeare lived not too far from it. And John Milton, the noted British writer, was married at this church. And so what happened is this church existed for centuries, built in the 12th century, and then it was burned to the ground in the Great Fire of London in 1666. And then it was rebuilt shortly after that by, and it was designed by noted architect Sir Christopher Wren, who designed St. Mary the Virgin Aldermanbury and about 50 other churches in England, including St. Paul's Cathedral. And so it resurfaced after the Great Fire in 1666. And then to finish the story, it was bombed in the Blitz of the German Luftwaffe in 1940, in December of that year. And it was completely gutted, and only the walls and some of the pillars remained.
Well, how does it happen to be in Fulton?
So after Churchill gave his Iron Curtain speech, about 15 years later, the leaders at Westminster College were looking at how to commemorate Churchill's visit. And so they acquired the stones, the walls, the pillars to this church, began that process in 1961. And then by the end of the decade, they had brought stone by stone the church from what remained of the church from England by boat to Virginia, by train to St. Louis, and by truck from St. Louis to Fulton, Missouri, and they reconstructed the whole thing. One interesting note is that the London Times, I think it was, called it the world's largest architectural jigsaw puzzle.
I would think so. How many stones were there?
You know, I'm not too sure. I want to say it was something like 7,000, but I'm not too sure on that number. I know it was thousands.
Yeah. I'm surprised that the Brits would give that up, I mean, given its history.
There were a few structures that were bombed out, and after the war, they simply did not have the means to rebuild all of what had been destroyed during World War II. So it had laid in ruins for years and years and years. And so I think that I specifically asked Timothy Riley, I said, were there detractors from bringing the stones over here? And he said, no, not really. They were glad to see that it was going to have some legitimate purpose.
Who initiated the bringing the church or the remains of the church to Fulton?
It was the president of Westminster College in 1961 who had begun to do that process. And I actually interviewed a man who was the building and grounds supervisor during the 60s at Westminster College, who oversaw these stones coming to the United States, and he had an interesting story to tell in terms of what it was like to receive all of these stones in the trucks.
How long did it take to put this thing back together, Ian, this jigsaw puzzle?
Yeah, the construction started in 1964, so the process began in 61, and they ended up coming over. I think that construction began in 64, and then it was finally dedicated and opened in 1969.
And for the dedication, I'm sure there were luminaries present.
I believe so. I believe Harry Truman was mm-hmm. there, and there were others.
And of course, it was Truman who was instrumental in getting Churchill to come to Fulton in 46 for ultimately the Iron Curtain speech.
Right. As we heard during that piece before, the postscript that Truman had added to the bottom of the letter of the invitation to Churchill for him to come to Missouri. It was Harry Truman that was really the reason why Churchill came to the United States to deliver that Iron Curtain speech.
That Westminster institution is really quite remarkable when you think of its association with such an important moment in history.
It is, and they have had famous people come, not just Winston Churchill, but Margaret Thatcher has delivered a speech there, Mikhail Gorbachev, President Ronald Reagan, and so Timothy Riley told me that they punch above their weight class when it comes to bringing such speakers to campus.
I covered the Gorbachev visit there, and there were pieces of the Berlin Wall that had been shipped over. Yet another jigsaw puzzle to put together to note the historic nature
and,
of that.
And there is a section of the Berlin Wall there.
Still there, yeah. Alex Horror, thank you so much. Very, very interesting story.
Happy to be here.
That does it for us for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.